Alrighty, friends and neighbors, you know what that means. It's time for one of our little chats. Coming to you from the lovely city of Atlanta, Georgia. Woohoo! We just recently, this evening, had a rather tumultuous storm, which was pretty frightening, and had all kinds of hurricane and tornadic-like scenarios. A lot of folks are still without power tonight, and I'm fortunate that nothing happened to me in this regard, except my lights flickered off and on for a while, and didn't have my cable TV, so, oh God, you know, God forbid. So I want to start off by talking a little bit about the piece I just played. That's one of my original pieces called If You're Two. And, excuse me, without going into too much detail, it's a song I wrote a while back about my disgust with people who were too, quote-unquote, fat, dumb, and drunk, and stupid. And that really is, that's the full title of the song, If You're Too Fat, Drunk, and Stupid, Stay at Home. But the shortened title is just, If You're Too. And I'm not talking about people who are a little overweight or who are a little tipsy or who are a little, you know, slow on the uptake. I mean, these are the guys and gals. And I'll tell you the story really quickly. I was at a concert several years ago with a buddy of mine. Actually, one of the James Gang reunion concerts. Excellent concert, by the way. And, you know, as a lot of times as you go to these concerts, particularly with the older folks in the show, older folks in the audience, of course, of which I would clearly qualify, but older folks who think they're still skinny when they were, like when they were kids, and they're not, and their, you know, butt cheeks are hanging out from, you know, under their way too tight jeans. And why is it that all the chicks who have too big butts wear the tightest jeans and then they look sexy and they look like a tub of lard? I mean, I'm sorry, but you just look like shit. Don't wear those things. But wear big, you know, Omar the Tent Maker, you know, dresses so nobody sees how fat you are. And I'm sorry, but that's just disgusting. You know, I understand if people have weight problems. I get it. But don't accentuate your weight problem. Don't wear clothes that make you look fatter than you are. And don't come to a concert and stand up in the seats and block everybody else's view. And that's what I was pissed off about. And this was like the third concert I'd been to with people who were too daggum drunk to know what the hell they were doing. They were too damn fat to sit in the chair, so they had to stand up the whole time and block everybody else's view, including mine, where ergo comes the stupid part. So, you know, as most of you know who know me, I have very little patience with people who are what I consider to be quote-unquote stupid, and that encompasses a large portion of the population, unfortunately. Or as one of my gracious hosts when I visited the United Kingdom several years ago said, you don't suffer fools easily, do you? And that was a very astute observation on his part. At any rate, that song comes out of my pissed offness at having too many fat people at concerts who don't fit in chairs and squench everybody else in the nearby seats, and then stand up in their chairs drunk and slovenly and throw up all over everybody and whoop and holler and wave their hands where nobody can see the band playing on the stage because they're too fat that you can't see, you know, beside them, around them, and especially these chicks with these hairdos that are like, you know, looks like something that Marie Antoinette would have worn. I mean, please, okay? Or as my friend in San Diego San Jose would say, bitch, please, okay? If you're going to have weird hairdos and poufadours and all this kind of weird shit, you know, spray it down, grease it down to your head when you go to the concerts. You can poof it all you want when you go to the ladies' room or, you know, get your nails done or whatever. Yeah, I know. People are probably freaking when they're hearing this going, oh, my God, this guy's rude and disgusting. Yes, I am. Thank you for noticing. And that piece was played, interestingly enough, on kind of an oxymoron of a guitar that I own, one of the guitars that I own, which is one of my signature models by Mr. James Burton, who most of you may or may not know. Some of you younger whippersnappers out there who don't know very much about music history may remember that James Burton got his start as a young'un here in America and became a kind of a fixture with Sun Records back in the day when Sam Phillips was doing, you know, all these guys and gals at Sun Records, and notably got a big break when he started playing for Ricky Nelson's band, which he played for basically until Ricky Nelson passed away. And you know, what a lot of people don't know, and then at that point he started playing with Elvis Presley in his band pretty much until Elvis Presley's death in 1977. In the meantime, I mean, he played with everybody from playing Dobro on Buffalo Springfield songs to playing with John Denver to Emmylou Harris. I mean, he's definitely been around, you know. Yeah, I think he's worked with Graham Parsons and Merle Haggard, and I know that he's also toured occasionally with Elvis Costello. He's just a really talented guy, and back in the really, really good guitarist and sort of innovative guy, and was actually, if I'm not mistaken, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2001, I think inducted by, of all people, Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, which is kind of interesting. I guess Keith is a fan of James Burton, and, you know, that's a good thing for Keith. At any rate, James actually has sort of a nickname of the master of the Telecaster. And he actually devised his own version of a Telecaster, which is sort of a cross between a Stratocaster and a Telecaster, in that it has a Telecaster body and Telecaster neck, but it has essentially Stratocaster guts to it. So the pickup configuration is very Stratocaster-esque, in the sense it has three pickups instead of the usual two that most Telecasters have. And it has sort of the, for lack of a better term, the lace sensor pickups that you see in some of the Telecasters with a five-way switch instead of a three-way switch. So it's a very interesting machine, and I really like it because, as most of you have heard me bitch about me not liking Strats, not because they don't sound great and look cool, but because of where the volume and controls are just get in my way, and I find it really annoying, and whatever idiot designed that to have the controls there should be drawn and quartered, in my personal opinion, but, you know, that's just me. But the Tele doesn't suffer from that, which is why I like Telecasters, Tele short for Telecaster. And the cool thing about the James Burton is that it's, you know, it's got the tone kind of a Strat, but the body style and the playability of a Tele, which I just love. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, as Van Halen might say. And actually, I have two James Burtons. I have an original one done back in the day, and then I have a more recent one done in the 90s that has interesting electronics in it. But what's even more interesting is most people can, you know, when they look at Telecasters and Stratocasters and stuff, they think of more either country or rockabilly, and rightfully so, or in some cases R&B. You know, or some occasionally jazz, or certainly blues for sure. You know, but then you have people like Clapton and Hendrix and Robin Trower, who've been playing Strats, you know, for a very, very long time, and Jeff Beck, although Jeff Beck also plays Telecasters, and Jimmy Page, who started on the Telecaster, believe it or not. I think I've mentioned that before. The first two Zeppelin albums were recorded back in the day with Jimmy Page on a Telecaster. You know, even though he plays traditionally Les Pauls for the most part and does so, you know, has done so since the first couple of records in the studio as well, predominantly, and does them certainly live for the most part. Jimmy has played Tellys in the past, and so has Jeff Beck, and so did Terry Kath of Chicago Transit Authority, and just really amazed me at the stuff he could do on a Telecaster. It just really blew me away. The guy was just a really phenomenal guitar player. It's just really too bad that whatever he was doing that led himself to accidentally shoot himself, essentially, my guess is probably stoned or drunk or whatever, back in the day at a party playing around with a gun that was loaded. And, you know, that's not a good combination, but it's really a shame because he was really a fabulous guitarist. And my the Chicago Transit Authority, most known to most of you nowadays as Chicago, but on their first couple of recordings back in the day, they were called CTA, Chicago Transit Authority. And actually, that's my favorite era of their music because it's got Terry Kass' great guitar playing. And any of you who don't believe it, listen to 25 or 6 to 4, even live at the Carnegie Hall recording. It's just amazing. And the thing that really blew me away on that particular recording is if you hear question 67 and 68, played there, you can really hear Terry Kath just going to town behind the horn players in the intro part to the song, where if you hear the recording in the studio, I really thought the first time I heard that, I was thinking, oh, that's kind of interesting, horn tripses in the back on, you know, on top of the horn parts in the front. Well, what it is it's Terry Kath on Telecaster, but you can't really tell that, or at least I couldn't really tell that on the studio recording, but you can hear him just blazing on that thing on the live at Carnegie Hall recordings with him while the horn players are doing their thing, and you hear this guy just, I mean, cooking like nobody's business on a telly. Just amazed me. There's a story that I heard somewhere, and I don't know how true it is, but there's a story where Chicago had just gotten signed to a record deal, and they were playing some club, and there was a guitarist in the audience, and the break went up to Robert Lamb, the keyboard player of Chicago Transit Authority, and said, you know, I just wanted to come up and say, you know, your guitar player is really awesome, one of the best guitar players I've ever heard. He's a whole lot better than I am, and I'm no slouch. And the guy that was talking to Robert Lamb was Jimi Hendrix. So that's certainly high praise, as evidently Mr. Hendrix is definitely no slouch, particularly on the effects and the creativity on guitar that man had, particularly for the day. Just pretty amazing. But the interesting thing about the piece that I just played, not so much it was played on a James Burton telly, but it's sort of the oxymoron because it was played on a telly through an Orange amp, which most people, if you know anything about the history of Orange amps, associates that with hard rock and heavy metal, particularly bands like Black Sabbath, where if you have seen any of the old videos like of Iron Man or Paranoid and that stuff, you get to see the band playing, and both Geezer Butler, the bass player, fabulous bass player, and Tony Iommi, the wonderful left-handed metal guitar guy, are both playing Orange amplifiers. And you can tell because Orange. They're pretty hard to miss. Although some of the more modern-day Oranges have come out in black. The classic Orange is an orange-colored amplifier. And so I have an Orange head that I was putting through Marshall cabinets, through vintage modern cabs, slanted 412 cab. So it was really an interesting amalgamation of an Orange head, a Marshall cab, and a James Burton Telecaster, which is something that one would not normally put together. One would normally put a Les Paul or maybe a Flying V or even a Firebird with that sort of head and cab combo, and certainly play it with a lot more overdrive and stuff that I had on it. But, you know, I'm sort of known for taking iconic amps and doing weird things with them. But I like the iconic sounds of them, too. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I have my moments. Anyway, I thought I'd play that little piece for you just to give you an interesting little history of the guitar and James Burton, obviously, who's still playing, still alive today as far as I know, and just a really, really cool guy. Part of my intro, too, talking about the song that I wrote a few years ago about my disgust with people's decorum at rock concerts, kind of goes to the topic of tonight's podcast, which is honesty. And as most of you probably have figured out already, I'm pretty blunt and upfront with folks. I'm pretty honest about my opinions. And most of the time, although usually not on these podcasts, although sometimes I am, I try to be a little politically correct and don't say a bunch of, you know, nasty four-letter words other than the W word that I say all the time, which I would say with great pride, work. Oh my God, he said it again! The most obscene four-letter word in the English language to most people. I don't really couch my linguistics in political correctness because, frankly, my definition of people who do political correctness are people who don't have the guts to tell the truth, which means politicians and other people who want to get elected to office and scam the public of a shitload of money. Oops, did I say that? And you know, that is from a totally nonpartisan view. I hate all crooked people of, you know, all political persuasions equally. Same thing with most religious groups. And I don't mean spiritual folks. I mean religious folks. There is a huge-ass difference. And for those of you who don't know the difference, shame on you. But I typically call a spade, and a hose, and an amplifier. I don't call them, you know, music boxes. I just say what it is I say. And if you don't like it, you know, don't listen to the podcast and don't hang around me and don't take my classes and don't show up at my office to be a patient of mine and don't be a friend of mine because you're going to hear the truth as I personally view it. And, you know, sometimes people go, well, that's just your opinion. You expecting me to give you somebody else's opinion? It's me, for God's sake. Hello, McFly. I'm not giving you my mom's opinion. I'm not giving you my cousin's opinion. I'm not giving you my best friend's opinion. I'm not giving you the president's opinion or the Pope's opinion, like I could give two shits about either of those people. Or, you know, but even people I really like and think highly of, I don't care. I have my own opinions. I'm going to give you my opinion. You don't want it, don't ask it. I'm typically not one of these guys that's boundary transgressional and foists my opinion on people unsolicited, except in these podcasts. And you got the warning at the beginning of the podcast. So if you didn't want my version of the truth, don't listen to the podcast. That's your option. That's why we still live in a free country, at least as far as I know at this point. But one could probably argue that. But, you know, we're not getting into political talks here. This is about honesty and telling the truth and being honest, something that politicians know damn little about for the most part, and a lot of religious figures don't know very much about either. In fact, most of the population doesn't know a whole lot about this because, you know, they don't bother to look and investigate what the reality of the truth that's published to them is. And a lot of people have been taught, and I'm not slamming the South or the North or the West or the East or any other part of the country, but let's face it, guys and gals, and I'm from the South, so I can talk about it, okay? We in the South are, you know, socially still, socioculturally conditioned to, you know, say the truth nicely and be polite and tell these little white lies and to go, oh, my stars, Scarlett, you know, and all this kind of crap. I don't do that stuff. I just tell it the way it is. And frankly, when you do that kind of crap, as far as I'm concerned, you're lying, okay? Now, obviously, there are two kinds of lies. There's what the Catholics might call the sin of commission and the sin of omission, right? Sin of commission is telling a bald-faced truth. You know, how many heads do you have? Four, when you only have one, okay? A sin of omission is just not saying something, right? And so people in the South tend to not say stuff or, you know, they leave parts out. So somebody says, how does this hairstyle look on me? And they go, oh, well, it doesn't look too bad. You know, and they leave off the part, you know, if you weren't dead and in a box for 4 days with no, you know, formaldehyde in your veins to preserve the corpse, right? They just leave shit like that off. You know, or they bat their eyes and go, well, everybody has their own opinion. And they just, you know, they take the chicken shit way out and not saying anything. I don't do that. And if most of you who have listened to these podcasts have come to that realization yourself, some cases much to people's chagrin and some cases much to people's pleasure. But whatever the reality of your tastes are, more power to you. Whatever your opinion is, you should hold it. Make sure that it's an opinion based on as much facts as you can get. And if it's not, and you're just one of these cantankerous folks that's going to believe what you believe regardless of the empirical evidence to the contrary, you're well privileged to do that. Just make sure that you say that, okay? To let people know that you're just going to hold on to your belief regardless of empirical data to the contrary. And that's okay. I'm really okay with that. If people say that, I'm totally cool with that. And the reason I'm talking about honesty is because one of my listeners sent me an article on the honesty experiment, which was done by an economist who does expert in the prediction markets, I'm told. What I know about economy would sit on the head of a pin, right? A very small pin at that. It's almost as much as I know about auto mechanics and electronics. And for those of you who know me, you're probably rolling hysterically in laughter, trying not to have a heart failure, and gasping for air between your chuckles and guffaws at this point, because, you know, my electronic and mechanical reasoning skills are less than an aardvark in heat that's been hit over the head by a baseball bat about 17 times. My knowledge of economics is likewise, okay? So these are definitely not my strong suits, and that's being kind to myself saying that. But it was an article written by Dr. Robin Hanson, who is a supposed predictive economy person, and what he suggests in this article is that people are, as he puts it, and this is a direct quote from Dr. Hanson, hardwired for hypocrisy, right? And what he basically says is this, is that people aren't used to honesty, and they certainly aren't used to complete 100% honesty. And that when they are faced with that, they don't really know what to do with that. And in many cases, they get really pissed off and don't like it and think you're a jerk and don't want anything to do with you. And, oh my God, you know, you're awful and terrible. And he did this experiment, evidently, where he did a 30-day a 30-day experiment to see, you know, how much people could stand 100% honesty for 30 days. And obviously, most of the folks, as you can probably guess, didn't really do very well with that. And, you know, it's a balance because, you know, on one hand, you don't want to say things that you think people are going to be hurt over. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to lie. And so you get put in this bind, and most people chicken shit out and just don't say what the truth is. And because people are so, you know, hardwired to be politically correct, translation lie, and not tell what they're really thinking, I think sometimes people forget and they don't even know what the hell they think. I think they've been so BS'd in their life that they don't even halfway know what's going on. It's funny too, because having read this article and had a couple of email exchanges with the person that sent me this, I was reminded conversation that I had. Sorry, I had a momentary lapse of reason. As most of you know, one of my learning disorders is anomia, and sometimes I forget names of words, much less people or anything else. And so conversation was a word I couldn't bring to my mind, and I've always had the anomia problem, which makes me feel like a total moron. But, you know, it is what it is, and we all have our weaknesses, and this is definitely one of mine that's annoying as hell, but it is what it is. At any rate, at least I know it, not trying to bullshit anybody about it, right? So I had a conversation back in the day with my master's director of my master's program back in the day, and he and I were talking about honesty and about being oneself. And that's really something that I've struggled with most of my life, because as most of you probably have figured out by now, if you've listened to some of these podcasts, is you probably figured out that I'm a pretty weird individual, okay? And you can call me eccentric, you can call me unique, you can call me anything you want, or you don't have to really call me if you don't want to, right? But okay, yeah, I know my jokes never get any better. Sorry, guys and gals. But I've always been weird. You know, I'm the hard rock heavy metal guy who's never been drunk or stoned or anything else. I don't do drugs except, and you guys have heard me preach this before, you know, caffeine occasionally and coffee and theophylline, which is the caffeine derivative, and tea, and occasionally in certain sodas, but I don't do them very often. And, you know, certainly I drink alcohol on rare occasions, but I've never been drunk. I have no intention or desire to be drunk. I've never tried pot or any of that other crap. I think it's, you know, it's really, the reason it's called dope is because it characterizes the people that do it. You're dopes. You know, if you have a brain and you want to use whatever brain cells you have, that's not the kind of shit you want to do to enhance them, okay? That's why I don't do sugar. probably the most destructive drug in America, bar none. And we don't want to get me started on that. But yeah, that's why I do most of my cooking at home. And you know, as I said, I'm a weirdo, right? That's not to say that I didn't do stupid shit in terms of eating bad food as a kid. I've never done drugs, thank God. But you know, I certainly did stupid shit eating, you know, fast foods and prepackaged foods and sugar as a kid. And when I figured out that stuff was killing me, I quit doing it. But at any rate, you know, I have the hair and I look the part. You know, I don't look like a doctor. I've got the long curl and my hair is naturally curly. Thank you to my Greek heritage. And, you know, but I'm very outspoken. I'm not as politically correct guy. I don't soft speak stuff. When patients come in to me and I do diagnosis with them, I'm very honest about their diagnoses. And by the way, there's a difference in being honest and being a rude son of a biscuit eater. A huge, huge difference. You can be very blunt and honest with people and say it in a way that they know you're trying to be relational and you're doing it for their own good and you're trying to educate them. Now, some people are going to get pissed off anyway. And, you know, if you're one of those people, sucks to be you because you're going to hear it. You want to get, you know, some sab sub story from one of my colleagues that likes to, you know, make money and put money in his or her bank account and lie to you, go to one of them. I can't do it, right? I know that's the modus operandi of a lot of people in my profession, but I'm not doing it. Sorry, but that's the truth, right? I was once told by a colleague of mine that you don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg when I asked this person why he wasn't confronting his patients who are obviously borderline personality disordered by his own admission as well, but they were also had a shitload of money. And his verbatim quote to me is, oh, you don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. And obviously I had no use for that kind of crap. But, you know, we're taught to be polite and smile and not tell people shit. And I've never bought that. I thought that was horse manure. I still think it's horse manure. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're God, the Pope. I don't give a shit. If you're my best friend, I don't care. The truth is the truth as I see it. It's not going to change unless you can prove me wrong otherwise, and you better have a shootload of data if you're going to do that. At any rate, you don't want my opinion, don't ask it. I'm good with not giving it to you. That's a boundary transgression. If you give your opinion without somebody asking for it, my father's notoriously good at that. So you don't want to be a narcissist, you don't want to cross boundaries, you don't want to be a borderline, you know, cluster B personality disorders are bad, okay? But I've always been this kind of weird guy, you know. I'm this long-haired guy that plays hard rock and heavy metal, half since I was 10 or 11 years old, right? But I'm also the hard rock heavy metal guy who always knows his parts, who isn't late for practice, who doesn't show up drunk and stoned, who's never showed up drunk and stoned. You know, I'm compulsive as hell. I don't miss practices. I don't miss gigs unless I'm dying. But I'm also the academic who doesn't buy this, you know, oh, well, you can't say that to people model, and oh my God, and you know, I don't buy any of that crap. So I'm very much an iconoclast and a statistical outlier in the statistical definition. At any rate, my master's level supervisor and I were talking about part of the reason that I get a lot of flack from people, because I got flack pretty much my entire academic career, except my last couple of years during my doctorate when I was at a wonderful, 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 best institution on the planet at the time. I called it Camelot, and it really was, and I'm not ashamed to say it. The fact that it was the number two program, doctoral program in the nation, was a well-deserved accolade, in my opinion. Wright State University School of Professional Psychology, woo-hoo to Drs. Bent, who unfortunately is no longer in this realm of existence, Dr. Barkley, who has also passed on, and Dr. Fox, who I think is still with us. Awesome deans. I loved them. They were the bomb. They're still the bomb wherever they may be. Greatest bunch of people anybody could ever want. I just absolutely loved it. But having gone to the school mostly in the South, I got a lot of this, you know, as Neil Peart would say in subdivisions, conform or be cast out. Well, I'd rather cast out than be a conformist. I've never been a conformist. I think conformity sucks unless that's just what you do normally. And if you're normally a conformist and that's you and that fits your personality style and that fits your real beliefs, then by all means do that. Be true to yourself. You know, follow the Shakespearean caveat, you know, for those of you who are Shakespeare people as I am. Yeah, I know, a hard rock, heavy metal guy who likes Shakespeare, right? I told you, I'm a weirdo, right? I love, you know, the speech in Hamlet that Polonius gives to Laertes, I think, you know, where he says, you know, neither a borrower nor a lender be. And the last thing that he says to his son, you know, above all this, to thine own self be true, right? And that also means not lie to yourself, be yourself, be true to yourself, and you can't be true to yourself if you have a moral and a brain and tell people lies. You just can't do it. I challenge anybody who has a moral and a brain to do that. So I often say things that get me into a lot of trouble because most people I have discovered over the years, much to my chagrin and sorrow and shock in the early days, don't really want to hear the truth. They really don't. They don't really want to hear your opinion. They say they do, but they're liars. Or they think they want you to. They're delusional. Which is better than being a liar, in my personal opinion. And they don't really want to hear the truth. They just want you to agree with them. Okay, well, sorry, that doesn't work for me. I don't give a shit if you're head of my doctoral committee. I don't give a shit if you're a bum on the street. I don't care if you're head of the licensing board. I don't care if you're, you know, Eric Clapton. I don't care, right? And I love Eric Clapton. He's one of my favorite guitar players on the planet. One of my guitar gods from way back when. But, you know, if Eric says, how do you like this riff? You know, if he says, how do you like my remake of Layla on the unplugged version? I would have to be honest to say, Eric, you screwed up your own song, okay? I call that version Ludla because it sounds like he's on Ludes playing that song. Sorry, I hate it, right? You want to hear Layla, go listen to the original version off Derek and Domino's, right? Layla and assorted other love songs, that whole double album. Back in the day thing rocked, but I mean, how could you go wrong with Eric Clapton and Duane Allman on slide guitar from the Allman Brothers? I mean, oh my God, those are two of like the greatest iconic guitarists, classic rock guitarists on the planet. Duane is probably one of the best slide players ever, along with people like Little George of Little Feet, and you know, he's just amazing, amazing, amazing. Ry Cooder, another amazing slide player. Most of you guys probably don't know that because, you know, he's not a real famous guy, but he's played on everybody's records from the Stones to just about everybody on the planet. But, you know, so I'd have to say to Eric, you know, Eric, I love you. You're a great guitar player. I love most of the stuff you write, but that acoustic version of Layla sucks. It just sucks. I can't even hear that without cringing. I can't. If it comes on the radio, I turn the station. I can't take it. I want to go back to the original version. And it's just that thing is just a bomb. But at any rate, so, you know, I'm just very honest with folks. And I don't say it to be mean. I don't say it to insult folks. I don't say it to so folks will feel hurt or anything. But if you ask my opinion, I'm going to tell you. Right? And that got me into a whole lot of trouble in grad school and sometimes in undergrad school because people don't want to hear that shit. When professors say, how do you like what I'm doing? Or, hey, how do you like the way the course is being taught? Or, what do you think of that last test? If I think the test sucks and I think you suck as a professor, I'm going to tell you that. Right? And I'm going to tell you how you suck and what you need to do to get better. And I'm not going to say it that rudely or, look, dude, you suck. Or, look, honey, yes, you know, you're terrible. But I'm going to tell you. And, you know, the other thing is I have an unorthodox approach to a lot of things. I mean, I'm the, you know, when you learn to play guitar, what do most people do when they're learning to play guitar, right? So most of you guitar guys and gals out there, how did you learn to play guitar first, right? Most of you probably learned to play an acoustic first, right? And you probably learned to play chords, right? And then you started strumming chords and trying to sing or at least strum chords to your favorite songs, whether it was, you know, Willie Nelson or, you know, Eric Clapton or Chaka Khan or, you know, Dave Matthews or, you know, Bob Dylan or whatever. You learn to play, you learn to strum, and then you move from that. If you're a rock and roll guy or an R&B guy, whatever, or a blues guy, you move from that to electric and tried to emulate your favorite artists. Or, you know, and if you're a lead player, then you went from that and started learning leads and scales and stuff, right? Well, no, that's not how I learned. I picked the guitar up. I took a couple of lessons, and I went, shit, I know this stuff already. This is all I'm going to learn in 3 lessons. I already know this shit. Why am I not being taught something else? So I quit and taught myself. And with that in mind, excuse me, I started picking up lead riffs. So, you know, I had no, you know, to me, rhythm guitar players were second-class citizens back in the day. So, you know, what did I want to play rhythm for? I want to be a lead player. Lead players don't play chords, they play notes, right? Now, you know, people like Clapton do both because he's a great guitar player. People like Jimi Hendrix do both, right? And a lot of your great guitar players do both. But, you know, when you're young and dumb and full of cum like I was back in the day, you're a lead player, you don't play chords, you play notes, right? I mean, talk about rigid, okay? Well, this is why I'm obsessive compulsive personality disorder. At any rate, so I started out learning lead solo, stuff and picking out lead and vocal lines. And what did I start out on? That's right, an electric guitar. Okay, I didn't start out on an acoustic. I played electric guitar for like 7 years before I got an acoustic. So after I played lead notes, you know, I couldn't tell you a thing I was playing. All right, at some point then I thought, you know what, I need to learn chords. And then I started teaching myself chords. And then I thought, you know, I need to learn what the hell these notes are. Oh, yeah, I'm in the key of A. Oh, I'm in the key of B minor. Oh, shit, okay, that's why, you know. Because people would play, and I've got this really good ear. I could just pick the guitar up and just start going. I can still do that today. I mean, I can hear the chords in my head and start playing. I mean, I've just got one of those ears. And what you don't want to do is, because I have visual learning problems, you don't want to show me, you know, pictographs, which essentially is what sheet music is. It's like, you know, doing Egyptology stuff, and my visual, you know, processing skills are almost as good as my, you know, mechanical reasoning skills, but not quite. So we're going to be playing My Dog Has Fleas for the next 3 years if you show me sheet music. If you play the song, I'm hearing it go, oh, A minor, B suspended. Yeah, okay, I got it. What kind of solo do you want? What kind of bass line do you want? What kind of mandolin do you want? Okay, got it. Roll the tape. I'm ready to go, right? So, you know, I've done everything bass backwards. I've always been an iconoclast. So when I got into grad school and got into college, I was the same way. I was very outspoken. I'm still very outspoken, as you can tell. You know, and they got me into a lot of trouble. And a couple of my professors during my master's, you know, particularly the person who was, you know, kind of overseeing me, and he and I clicked, and it was really interesting because he and I could not be on the surface any more different. I mean, I had the really long hair and was, you know, this big, you know, You couldn't miss me, you know. And this was a guy who was very, you know, spiritual. I mean, I was spiritual too, but if you looked at me and talked to me, you wouldn't think so. But this guy was very spiritual and very religious, which is a very unusual combination. Really, really cool guy. Nice guy, very smart, but very Southern, very low-key. You know, he looked normal. He had the short hair. He looked, you know, like a college professor kind of guy. And he and I just became the best buddies. And people would see us walking together and scratch their heads going, I don't get it. What the hell? And, you know, he would say to me a lot of times, you know, the reason people resent you and don't like you in some cases is because you tell them what you think and people don't really want to hear that. And that was just such a weird concept for me at the time. He said, and the other thing is, you know, you dance to the beat of a different drummer, as I like to call it. I play guitar to the beat of a different strummer. And I do. And the thing is, the way I approach problems is right for me. I'm not saying it's right for everybody else, but it works for me. And I get to the same place that everybody else gets doing their way of doing it. But I usually get to it faster, and honestly, and I mean no disrespect to anybody else, I usually do it better, right? And that's what this guy was saying. He says, and people get pissed off because you prove them wrong. They want you to do it their way, and they want to, you know, write you off as a heretic and a weirdo and all this kind of stuff, all of which, of course, I am. But I'm also a smart weirdo who gets good results, and they resent the shit out of it, and they want to punish you for it. And that was his bottom line. And so what he was really saying is, people don't like weirdos, and people don't like smart weirdos because they prove them wrong, and people don't like smart weirdos who tell them what they really think and tell them what's really on their mind. And he was absolutely right. And I really didn't want to hear it at the time, although I certainly believed what he was saying. It was just such a disconnect for me cognitively. I got it on some level, but I didn't get it. It's taken me, I hate to say it, but it's probably took me another 10 years to really grasp it. I mean, I'm a slow learner about stuff. I may have a really high IQ, but there's some stuff that I'm just dumber than dog poop about, and that's one of them. And it really took me a while for that to sink in. Why wouldn't people want the truth as you see it? Why wouldn't people want to have an open discussion about it? Why wouldn't, you know, when people have information and they share it with me, I love the fact that they do that. I mean, I've got a buddy, and usually most of my buddies are gifted in the areas that I'm dumber than dog poop about. And I go and talk to them about it. You know, I ask, you know, some of my political freaks, what's going on? What's the story? What's the conservative view? What's the libertarian view? What's the, you know, the radical view? What's, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I want to get all the views. I want to, you know, where should I go read about it? Where, you know, what can I learn about it? You know, I talk to buddies who know about mechanical stuff and electrical stuff. I want to know about this stuff. I want to know, I talk to people who know about things like insurance, which I know less than nothing about, or automobiles, which I really know less than nothing about. You know, I go to people who know, and I take notes. I listen to them. I go to experts or people who are knowledgeable, and I love hearing their stuff. And if I have a belief that's wrong and they correct me, I like it. You know, I don't get all pissed off. I like it, right? if somebody tells me something I don't want to hear, well, it sucks to be me. But if I don't know something and somebody's being honest with me, if I ask somebody's opinion and they say, you know, dude, I hate your hair. And I said, how do you like my hairdo? And they go, I hate your hair. I'm going to get pissed at them. I asked for it. Why the hell? If I didn't want the truth, why the hell did I ask for it? Right? And what this guy, Dr. Hansen, is saying in his honesty experiment is the same thing, you know, that that the doctor told me many, you know, that the doctor guy who was head of my master's committee at the time told me, people don't really want to hear the truth. They want you to sugarcoat it. They want you to cover it up. You know, they want you to smile and bat your eyes and not say stuff and say it in veiled ways and agree with them. And well, you know what? I suck with that. And probably why I don't get along with people very well in general. And most of the folks who stick with me in counseling are those folks who really want to come in and they want to hear the truth as I know it, as many, you know, as much as any human person can know it, because obviously I'm not God, not going to be God anytime soon. And I tell people what I think. You know, isn't that what they're paying me for, the truth? You're going to pay me to lie to you? That's dumber than dog poop. That's like me going to a car on a mechanic guy with my engine sputtering and making crazy noises. And I go to the guy and I say, hey, what's wrong with my car engine? You know, and what it really needs is a ring job. And the guy goes, well, your car's making kind of a funny noise. It's just temperamental. I just kicked it a couple of times and used really high grade oil. You'll be fine. Well, no. If I need a ring job and it's going to cost me $2,000, just, you know, bite the bullet and tell me, dude, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you know what? Your engine sucks and you need $2,000 worth of work if you don't want this thing to blow up and you have to replace it and spend $10,000 next year. You can spend the money now. You can spend it later. What do you want to do? It's your car. Tell me what you want me to do. Oh, my God, I value that kind of feedback, but most people don't. They really don't. They don't want to hear what it is. They really don't want to hear what it is from people if it conflicts with what they think, whether it's somebody's romantic partners or anything else. And that's the same thing that this guy, Dr. Hansen, Robin Hansen, is finding out. People don't want it. You know, they're not even aware that they're being hypocrites. They just, you know, they say they want the truth, but they really don't. They just don't. You know, they absolutely do not. You know, look at the people we elect. It, you know, to Congress locally, nationally, or whatever, right? We elect people to tell us what we want to hear, not the people who tell us the truth. You know, how many thousands of times have we caught politicians of all levels and all areas, state, local, national, whatever, in lies? How many lies do we not know about? Well, look at what the government just got caught doing recently. You know, this wiretapping and all this crap. I mean, holy, you know, I think there's a whole lot more back there than we know, right? And I think that's true of a lot of our spiritual leaders. No, let me take that back. Our religious leaders. Spiritual leaders wouldn't do that. Religious leaders would. There's a huge difference, and I don't really have a lot of use for a lot of religious people. I think spiritual people are awesome, and if you're spiritual and religious at the same time, and you're, those are very copacetic for you, I think that's the most awesome thing on the planet. But most people have no clue what spirituality is. They're religious. And they have no clue that they're not being spiritual. They think they're spiritual. And they think they're going to heaven or Elysian fields or wherever. And I personally think these people are going to, well, I think that they're not going to the same place they think they're going in the afterlife. So that's just me. But yeah, I mean, people don't really want the truth. That's the bottom line, right? And people can't really, and that's pretty much what Dr. Hansen says, that people can't really deal with complete honesty. People can't even deal with half-ass honesty. And I can tell you that's absolutely true. And I find that incredibly sad. And when you think about that, keep that in mind the next time you ask your buddy, your friend, your wife, your husband, your lover, whatever. You know, when you ask them for an opinion, think about what you really want. Do you really want the truth? Do you really want somebody to tell you what they think you want to hear? Or do they want to tell you what resonates with their being, right? And if it's not what you want to hear, you have to be man or woman enough to say, thank you for being honest. And one of the things I tell people is, I don't always like what folks tell me, but I really appreciate and value the fact that they have the guts and the integrity and the honesty to tell me what they really think, right? when a patient tells me he's coming in for drug counseling, particularly when they're teenagers, I mean, let's face it, and no offense to teenagers, I love teenagers. They're my favorite patient population, right? But a lot of teenagers don't want to change. They come in because they got caught and they don't want to go to jail. And they think, I'm going to be a better option than jail. Little do they know. But anyway, they come in and they, let's say they get caught for doing drugs, right? The brassier ones will tell me, dude, I have no intention of quitting doing drugs. You can sit there and talk to you blue in the face. You can show me all the research you want. I'm not going to believe it, and I'm not going to stop doing drugs because I really don't think all that shit's going to happen to me. I believe it happens to some people, but I don't really think it's going to happen to me. I'm not going to die of cancer if I keep smoking cigarettes, right? I know somebody was 90 years old and still smoking cigarettes, and they're living fine, and they're not on a respirator, and they're not in a wheelchair, and they're, you know, well, bully for them. They are the rare exception to the rule, okay? And that has to do a lot with a plethora of factors, including how hardy their genes are. You know, did they work out? Did they just get lucky? Does cancer run or not in their family? Yada, yada. But anyway, the point being, kids will come and tell me, I'm not going to give up sugar. I'm not going to stop using marijuana. I'm not going to stop doing this. I respect that. I think they're idiots, and I tell them that. But I also thank them for being honest, and I really respect and admire them for that. And I tell them that too. You cannot over honor honesty. You just cannot, in my personal opinion. And so if a kid tells me he's not going to quit or she's not going to quit or they're not going to do this or they're not going to do so-called safe sex, I call it safer sex. Let's be honest, okay? And if you're not listening to these podcasts for honesty as I believe it, then you're listening to these for the wrong reason. You're a masochist and you just want to get beat up or something. I don't know. Or you want to get shocked or whatever. At any rate, I really appreciate those folks. And I have people all the time tell me I'm not going to stop doing that. You know, parents will tell me, why should I stop yelling at my kids? Well, because you're role modeling the wrong behavior. And you're acting like a four-year-old and you're 45. You know, act your age and, you know, not your IQ points. And I joke with parents a lot. And they get real mad at me, you know, and I call parents out when they screw up. When I think they're doing something incredibly stupid and they're in my office, they're there asking me for my opinion, right? They're there to get help. My job is to make them better parents, to help them to be better parents or better lovers or better whatever, right? I'm not there to stroke their egos, right? And if they're in there for that, they got the wrong shrink, okay? Wrong guy. It's all I can do not to intervene when I see parents doing stupid shit in the grocery store. But that would be a boundary transgression. And anytime I feel like sticking my 2 cents in when it's not asked for, paid for, or wanted, I grab myself by the collar and walk down the aisle with baby diapers like I need baby diapers, right? But it's a reminder, right? I walk down an aisle just to get away from seeing it, out of sight, out of mind, la, 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 la. Because if I stand there long enough and see it, I'm going to feel compelled to go in and say something about it, because that's an example of stupid people, which I really despise, as you heard earlier in this podcast. And I don't like stupid people. So I just, you know, that's my problem, not their problem. I own the problem. If I own the problem, I own the solution, which means I need to get my little butt out of there and get away from it and distract myself and do something else. Not my freaking business, right? You're in my office, my freaking business. So you don't want to hear it? Go to see somebody else. Don't come in the office. It's just really that simple. And again, I don't say it in a mean way unless I can't do it any other way. Usually the first couple of times I try to say it nicely. I take a couple of breaths. I think about what I'm going to say. I think about how I'm going to phrase it. And, you know, it's not like I go, oh, well, you know, that dress looks okay. You know, if the dress looks like ass on you and you ask my opinion, I'll go, you know, I don't think that's really the right style for you. And if they say, really, why do you think that? Well, because I think it accentuates, and I always say things like, please don't mishear me, I'm not trying to insult you, I'm not trying to say things for you to feel insulted or hurt, I'm not putting you down, please don't mishear this, I'm not slamming you, I'm not trying to make you feel, you know, insulted or hurt or whatever, but, you know, you got too much cellulite to be wearing those jeans, honey. You know, and again, I don't say it that way, but I say, you know, you just don't have the hips for the, I'm sorry, you know, if you want to do a lot of exercising and toning and get svelte and want to wear some cool jeans, let me give you the name of some really cool personal trainers that I know who are awesome, who you will love. And besides, they're hotties. You're like looking at them, okay? You'll enjoy sweating, sweating with the hotties, okay? And they're really good at their job, and they give a flip, and really cool people, and you'll feel better, and you'll live longer, and you'll fit into those jeans, and you'll look awesome. And then you can come back and ask me, and I can say, oh my God, you look amazing. Okay, or as Billy Crystal used to go, you look marvelous. So that's just the way it is. And so for those of you who like to tell the truth, you can tell the truth nicely. You can tell the truth honestly. And if people don't want to hear it, sucks to be them. They shouldn't have asked you in the first place. Now, again, telling the truth doesn't mean being a jerk about it, right? I always preface what I'm going to say with, please don't take this the wrong way. Please don't mishear me. Please don't think I'm trying to be a jerk or I'm trying to say things that you'll find hurtful or insulting or whatever, you know. And I'll say it that two or three times. And if they still give me this why routine or still fight back, particularly if they're in my office, and they push back, I just go, you know, I was trying to say this nicely, and I guess you're not hearing me, so let me say this rudely, and let me once again apologize for how this... Now, I always say that because I want somebody to hear that I'm saying this in service to them. I'm not saying this to be a jerk, to stroke my own narcissism, which thankfully I usually don't have, although sometimes I act like it. I struggle against that a lot, having grown up with a narcissistic dad. The last thing I want to do is, you know, somebody to feel boundary transgressed upon, as narcissists are so famous to do. And so I go out of my way with disqualifying how I'm going to say it, right? But if I can't corral somebody's behavior nicely, then I'll say it really roughly. And, you know, then I'll apologize after and say, I'm really sorry that I had to say it that way, but I don't think you were hearing me the other way, and I didn't know how else to say it. If you know another way to tell me to say it in the future, please educate me. I'd love to learn, right? And I do. I love learning. I am the quintessential lifelong learner. And I tell people, if you're not learning, you're not growing. If you're not growing, you're dying. If you're dying, you're in the grave. And I'm not ready for that shit yet. So that's my take on honesty. And I think people, in my personal opinion, just my opinion, don't have any data to substantiate this. So I want you guys and gals to hear this is just an opinion that I'm so fond of saying. I think that everybody should be at all times honest with everyone they interact, regardless of the nature of the interaction or why they're interacting or whatever. Because if you're not honest with yourself, you're not being true to yourself. And at some point, if you keep being dishonest with yourself, you're going to forget who the you inside the you is. And that's not a good thing. Right. I find way too many people in this community and in this country. I can't speak for, you know, Asians or Hispanic folks or Europeans or anything else, but I can speak for most Americans that I've run into. And most of us don't know our, you know what, from a hole in the ground. We don't know who we really are at all, because who we think we are is not who we are. And who we think we are is the cars we have or the guitars we have in the closet or the amps we play. Or how many people we've had sex with, or how much money we have in the bank, or what role we play for our job, and that's not who we are. That's not even close. You know, as Shakespeare would say, you know, all the world's a stage, and all the people in it merely players. And if you're a player, and you don't know that you're playing a role, shame on you. Find out. You can find out. It's not that difficult. Start a lifelong dialogue with yourself and get to know yourself. Because if you don't know who you are, there's no way in heaven, hell, earth, purgatory, or the twilight zone you can share that entity that's you with another person. Which, in my personal opinion, is why we have so many failed marriages and divorces and relationships in this country, because we've got two people coming together who don't know shit about themselves. Or they're coming together to remediate pathology, and they have mutual, what I call complementary pathologies getting together. And, you know, it's kind of like Rodney Dangerfield said line when he's talking to the professor chick in the back to school, you know, and he says, you know, my ex-wife was a water sign and I'm an earth sign. Together we made mud. And that's what most people do. They come together with complementary pathologies and make mud. Right, they're trying to help get the other person to fix what's wrong with them by complimenting their stuff instead of facing their stuff and dealing with it, which I think is a bad idea. At any rate, that's my shtick, and I'm sticking to it. So I hope you guys enjoyed the auditory portion of our program and the music history lesson. And I hope you learned something about honesty and in your growth and spiritual development, always strive for honesty. It really is the best policy. Always, 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 right? Because in the long run, you've got to be true to you, and you've got to know who you are to be true to you and be genuine all the time. Nothing is more important, in my personal opinion, than knowing yourself, being true to yourself, and then that way you can share it with other people and hopefully finding other people who feel similarly that you can share similar life histories and values with and make much more lifelong, realistic friendships based on real stuff, not on facade. As always, I wish everyone only the best. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.